Welcome back to Copper Country Today. I'm your host, Rick Gallen, and joining me right now is our state representative, Scott Dianda. Scott, welcome back to Copper Country Today.
Well, thanks for having me on, Rick. Good to see you.
You got a chance to come up here during hunting season. I'm wondering, do you do any hunting yourself?
Yes, I do. I was out in the woods for about three different times now, and just a lot of does, one small little spike that I would not shoot, just waiting for the Hartford buck. So I just... You know, there's a little more time over there. Come back and forth every weekend, so always glad to go out in the woods.
Do you ever get an opportunity to hunt downstate and see if it's any different than up here?
Well, I haven't. I've had chances to hunt down there, but I haven't been down there hunting in many years. It's just, you know, it's nice to be up in Houghton County, Keweenaw County, when you're rolling around, and, you know, you just don't have the hunters around you, and I just kind of like to have that peace and quiet rather than look around a farm field and see all that orange and many different hunters.
Well, it's good to have you back here during the legislative break here for the holidays. And a couple of things that were definitely going on before the Thanksgiving holiday rolled around. And big one was the most recent one on the no-fault auto insurance reform. There was the package that was proposed, and it was, you know, the idea was to reduce all of our costs by that we don't have to pay as much for the unlimited medical care. But you saw some holes in that.
Yeah, I definitely did, and that's why I was opposed to the change in that auto insurance, and it was with good reason. We would have had to give up 80% of our benefits to be able to save $14 a month with no guarantee that they were going to hold that $14 a month coverage for us into the future. And, you know, that was the problem with House Bill 5013. That was the Leonard plan, Duggan plan from the mayor of Detroit was really pushing this. It would have saved money for the city of Detroit, but us in the rural areas would have not had that savings. And I tell you what, we're seven counties in the 110th district, and, you know, our money is just as valuable to the people in the city of Detroit. And I think, you know, a lot of people get tired of bailing them out.
When I see a bill like this come across and it's hailed as going to save us a bunch of money on our car insurance, and then I look at it and it seems, no, this isn't going to save us a bunch of money. It's going to save insurance companies a bunch of money. I just wonder who do they have in mind when they're writing bills like this?
Well, that's the problem when you got the insurance companies writing the bills for the lawmakers. And, you know, there's different plans that are out there as far as different legislative group of plans that we have to be able to lower the car insurance. And this wasn't one of them. I mean, to give up 80% of our benefits for $14 a month, knowing the insurance companies are sitting on $22.5 billion that's unaccountable to us as the legislators and the people of Michigan as the citizens. That's the part that's really wrong. That's why I supported a new plan, a bipartisan package of 22 bills sponsored by Democrats and Republicans in the House and the Senate. And I think what needs to happen is this bill package needs to be moved forward, because we have had one that went down in flames. 63 Democrats and Republicans out of 110 people knew that it was a bad bill. That's why we all voted it down. And I've got some great friends on the other side of the aisle who have sponsored bills that truly will make a difference in what we're going to pay for cost of insurance in the future. And one of the bills that is out there, part of that package, is House Bill 5104. It's Rep. Canfield's bill, and he's a doctor, and he understands the cost of the rates of service and what we need to pay for these procedures and everything, and that's one of the bills. And the other bill is 5108, Representative Frederick, and his is something that also takes a look at how we pay out for health care when they're in the home at a rate that every 3 years it would be reevaluated to see what we're going to have for the future for health care for these folks. So the part of the bill package is also House Bill 5124, which is Grimal's bill. Representative Grimal is from Oakland County. And his also is a fee schedule, where we're going to have a certain fee schedule for putting on the cost of different procedures that gets done. So the thing is, when we got a better bill package, you know, and we can really truly save money, one of the biggest things is for the seniors. If you're over 62 years old, you would be covered under your Medicare currently if we could write the legislation that would prohibit the insurance companies from charging the seniors. That is one of the bills that has been offered in this bill package. That's why we are encouraging everyone to be able to reach out to the chair of the insurance committee, which is Representative Theis, and she's the chair. And I encourage everybody to call her because we got a better bill package. Her number is 517-373-1784. 517-373-1784. We encourage people to reach out to her because she controls what bills get taken up in the insurance committee. These 22 bills are what's truly going to save us the money and make the fix to the insurance in Michigan. And the other one was just more of a smoking mirror. And the one thing that really bothered me is when we see the ambulance chasers standing next to the mayor of Detroit, like 1-800-CALL-SAM was there, and he was one of the people that was pushing for this bill package. That's one thing that red flagged it for a lot of us. What's in it for the people that are going to be out there suing and protecting these fraudulent claims? So that was something that was really interesting to see to who partnered up with that bill, which was a bad bill.
All right. Well, I was glad to see it go down myself, and just that, you know, somebody who pays for their own medical insurance. I don't ever want to use my medical insurance. I mean, the medical insurance isn't what it was in the past. And if I go to the doctors or go to an emergency room with the insurance that I have, I'm still going to have a huge amount of money out of pocket. It's nice to know that the insurance that's through your car insurance is still there to protect you.
Well, one of the things that people, you know, we all need to look at also is when you get your insurance bill for your car insurance, have them itemize it per vehicle. What is your comp? What is your collision? And we know what the cost is for the no fault in Michigan. It's $172 per year per vehicle. That's the thing. A lot of the insurance companies are saying, well, it's because of the no fault. It keeps going up, keep going up. Actually, it's the other cost. So I encourage everybody to look at that. One of the things about insurance that we see is that, you know, like myself, I live in Calumet. We're in an old home. You know, it's 1870. I got $100,000 worth of fire insurance on that house. It cost me about $450 to $500 per year for $100,000. And we start looking at protecting the kids in the back seat for $172. You got to start thinking about what's the value of something that's an unlimited type of fund, which, you know, with having that $22.5 billion sitting in that fund, it's to the point where if the legislative body had control over that, we would know how much interest is getting on that money, how much is their expenses, and how much the fund is growing. People don't realize, but back when John Engler was governor, we all at $5 billion, when that fund was sitting at $5 billion, we all got a check back for $150 per vehicle in Michigan at a rebate. Now the thing is at $22.5 billion. We haven't seen a rebate, and I think that's the thing that also got to be addressed.
Moving on to the next item, you are also helped put together a proposal for STEM grants for veterans, and this sounds like a good deal for our veterans and taking care of them, giving them a chance to pursue education.
Definitely. You know, this would be a grant that would give every veteran that wants to go to school in the STEM research area to be able to give them $5,000 per year as a full-time student to be able to go out there. These are the careers that Michigan is starving for. We've got the best and the brightest coming back out of our armed services, and I think this would be another thing to be able to get the population to move back into Michigan, to stay in Michigan, and to be in these jobs that we need. The high-tech jobs of the future for our veterans, who already are, a lot of them have been trained throughout their career in the military, that could be able to come here and go into our community college, to be able to go into Michigan Tech, Finlandia, wherever they choose to go. But it would give them a little bit more of an incentive also to go in this category where we are really looking for the medical folks. We're looking for the technology, the science, the education. We really got to start focusing on that. Those are the brightest folks that we have coming back, and we need to keep them in Michigan for the future.
$5,000 is a large amount of money for this. Is it just to reward veterans, or is that a worthwhile investment?
I think that's a great investment because why we're starting to see when people are going to come here and they're going to get educated in our local community colleges and our universities, and to be able to stay in Michigan, it is going to pay dividends long term because now those families are going to get established and have children and stay in our community, and just the process is going to get better and better for more job creation.
I know this was recently introduced, but where does it stand right now? Is it gaining traction?
Yes, I've got a lot of support from my colleagues in the House, and everybody's talking about that bill because the STEM technology, as we see, is just the biggest thing that's out there that we got to start focusing on. And it has to do also with the discussion on the autonomous vehicles. We're hearing about self-driving cars, and we're starting to see that Meijer's grocery store area operation just got one of the new Tesla semis that drives itself. You know, we got to start looking at the research and development end of it all the way to production, but we also have one of the big things in the UP that's going for us. We got the minerals it takes to run those systems. And I think that, you know, with that technology out there, we got to be on the forefront of it.
There are some naysayers about the driverless cars saying that they're not going to happen, but I sure was a guy from MDOT that was giving a graduation speech over at Michigan Tech a couple of years ago, telling these graduates, your children will not get a driver's license. it could be that much different in that short of time.
Rick, it's amazing to me also, but when you would have talked to people 30 years ago and told them that you would have a computer in a smartphone in your pocket where you can literally order anything on the internet and have it dropped off within days of that order, in the copper country, I think it would have surprised anybody out there.
Definitely me. One other thing I want to ask you about is, an effort there in Lansing about giving charter schools the ability to pull from millages that are passed that typically fund public schools. And you're against that as well.
Well, I think it's just dead wrong. I think that, you know, up here it was a prime example of how the community got together, the business people, our citizens in this area voted to have a millage to start more skilled trades in our area. And I think that it's totally wrong to have that money get carved up if we had a private, for-profit charter come into the area and say, well, now we want part of that money. Our voters would have never, ever voted in that aspect to be able to give them that authority. And I think it's wrong that downstate that they want to try to get into the business of the locals to be able to say, we are going to do it. I went and testified in front of the committee, and I told them all one thing. I gave them all a constitution of the U.S. government along with the Constitution of Michigan and said, this is against the Constitution of Michigan. And if you change it, then we would be able to fund it. But in the article, it says one thing. It is for public school. That money is for public schools. And I think there's a lot of eyebrows that got raised on the committee because, you know, just people, you know, they go through the motions sometime of not really understanding the legislation until we point out it's against the Constitution.
If the law is changed so that it becomes legal, at least legal here in the state of Michigan now, does that mean that those charter schools should be getting that money? I mean, they're trying to educate children as well.
Well, I know they're trying to educate children, and I give them that. And I think there's a lot of areas across the state that, you know, local control, what local elected school boards was, kind of tossed out. And I think that, you know, we got to get back to the most basic thing is having the local people sit on the school boards. And if there's a bad problem in a school district, you take care of it by the locals.
That legislation to make that to make it so the charter schools can pull money from the millages, where does that stand?
That we just had it in committee, in the education committee, and that's going to have to be voted on the House floor.
Okay.
And there's been a lot of controversy that has been raised over the fact that, you know, is this really going to be constitutional? I mean, this is something that, you know, are we going to have a change in the Constitution? I don't think there's a lot of people that would want to change that for that funding source to be able to give it to the for-profit schools.
Yeah, that'd be a tough sell, I think. Some of the things that we have talked about in the past, one of them is the dark store fight to, you know, keep big box stores paying their full share of taxes and having the tax tribunal ruling that they could have themselves taxed as if they were closed in an empty building, which costs a lot of money for local governments. And where does that stand right now?
Well, where it stands, again, is that we are going back to a couple of pieces of legislation. One of them that I sponsored originally was the fact that if you use a service, you have to pay for that service. And I think that's the most basic thing that we can get done with the Dark Store Initiative. Is that if you are using the services, whether it's city water, city sewer, whether you're using the law enforcement or fire protection, or even down to the basic service of having the roads plowed in front of these big box stores, I think that there's a way to be able to charge those folks accordingly. Because if you're using a service, we all have to pay for it. not just the chosen few.
But the companies that run those businesses, those stores, aren't they able to, you know, take the money that they may save from that taxes and then, you know, maybe down, you know, hire more people, expand more, do more business? Does that help everybody when they, you know, if you were to look at it from that point of view?
Sure. I think, you know, when we start looking at who the best businesses are, they're always the small businesses. They're the ones in our local community, like our local grocery stores, that say, you know, there's a function going on, they're there to help. You know, they're there to be able to provide what the community has had for years. And I think that that's the way that people got to start looking at it. And they got to start voting with their pocketbook. You know, if we can't get legislation done to fix this loophole for the dark stores, we got to take a look at where we're spending our money. Are we spending our money at our ma and pa grocery stores, or are we going to give it to these corporations that don't want to pay any taxes? They want the rest of us to pay for the service. So we got a choice out there. We got a choice on where we're spending our hard-earned money.
Well, from that answer, I could probably guess what your answer to this next question would be, because if we have higher costs for these larger companies to be, say, in a rural area like ours, some of the larger stores, well, if the risk is there and too much tax liability is there, they may choose not to open a store in an area where they, you know, could potentially close down without that incentive. So is it a loss for us to see those larger stores go away?
Well, I think that, you know, it comes down to, are we giving these small local businesses the same opportunity as these big box stores? I mean, no, and the answer is no. I mean, our smaller businesses, the ma and pa's, don't have the ability to go and hire a high-priced attorney to be able to go in front of the tax tribunal to get that kind of carve-out. So, I mean, you know, like I say, you know, what's good for one is good for all. It seems like we just don't have a fairness in this issue, where we get people that just want to roll in, use all the services that we have, and to be able to have it put back on small ma and pa business owner and the rest of us in the community. So I don't think they're too good a neighbor when they want to act in that fashion.
That model that is created that shows what happens to small businesses when you do have these large stores in your area, you know, the big ones, and I don't want to name any names, we got a lot of people here we do appreciate, but those businesses do have an effect on your small town mm-hmm. businesses, your downtown businesses, because it's so much difficult, it's so much more difficult to get people to come downtown, you know, to shop in a local business that, you know, sometimes they have to charge a little more because they don't have the bulk inventory that some of the large places do, and so it's easy for us. Of course, we want to go and get the best deal, we go there, and but then in the long run it hurts our downtowns, and you end up with a bunch of, you know, vacant storefronts. We've seen it.
Correct. And then, you know, in the end we all have to pay a new assessment or higher taxes to maintain what we have. So I guess it just comes down to a fair issue. You know, either when you're using services, we all have to pay for them, no matter if you're a big box store, small ma and pa, or just, you know, ma and pa kettle living in a small home in the community.
Talking with our state representative, Scott Dianda. Scott, I have to ask you, in the, you know, the wake of, you know, it just seems to be almost every week there's a major shooting somewhere, and another one in California that took place in public schools. Some say that we could reduce the risk of mass shootings in our schools if we allow people like our teachers to carry concealed weapons in the school. That's another, it's been raised again here in Lansing in the wake of all these shootings. What do you feel about that?
Well, I'll tell you what, I feel very strongly the fact that good citizens of Michigan should be able to carry a firearm. I think that a lot of people who have mental illness, the ones that have caused these massacres, should have never had a gun to begin with. And the ones that has happened in that church shooting in Texas was just such a tragedy to have happen in our country. But on the same token, it was someone who was mentally ill, who fell through the cracks with the paperwork through the government and the armed services not reporting that. So they were not on the watch list to be able to prohibit those folks from having that firearm. And I just feel very strongly that if we had people that were trained, and if you had people that were trained locally that could assist, I think that the death count, even in that church, but it had a very much a small setting. And I was really surprised that down in Texas that has happened, because I know that they're more of a open carry state, and they are more always those Texans are always carrying a lot of guns. And I just feel you know, up here with us that, you know, we have a lot of folks like myself that have been raised with firearms from a very young age, and we respect them and we know what it is to handle them. And I think that, you know, we got to have that discussion amongst all of us, especially in Michigan, is are we going to protect ourselves or are we just going to clean up from these massacres?
So God forbid a shooting like this was to take place in Copper Country, then would you, you know, feel safer, or that there's an opportunity to maybe to minimize the death toll if our teachers here in the Copper Country could be, protect themselves and protect their students with a weapon?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, this is the thing that the school boards locally have been having a lot of discussion on, is the fact that, you know, what is going to be a better situation? Is it a better situation to be unarmed when we have somebody come into our local schools and cause these massacres? Or are we better off to have an armed teacher or a superintendent or a custodian, bus driver, anybody that's trained and has the ability to react? I just think that, you know, that's the big thing that I think about, is what are we going to do to prevent this?
I definitely appreciate your honesty, even going against the party line, so to speak, on an issue like that. And that's one of the things we have appreciated about you serving in office here.
Well, that's the thing. I vote for my seven counties, and I vote for my folks. You know, this is the discussion of common sense that I drive to Lansing with every week. What's good for us is that's where we're going to be. You know, I don't think that we have to get on these issues where we get just one party or one group of people that are going to suggest one thing and we're going to go with it. I mean, you know, our people up here have put the faith in me to be able to make the best decisions for them, and I'm just trying to do that every day.
Scott, I also wanted to ask you, you know, with another story that just seems to be an avalanche of sexual assault accusations. They originated in Hollywood. You know, it's interesting to see as many women were coming out, and immediately as soon as they came out that day or the next day, the perpetrator or the person that was accused was condemned, even though really there hasn't been any, you know, sort of set standard to decide whether or not they were really guilty. In some of the major cases, there was enough people that came forward that it left little doubt. But now we're starting to see those same accusations cross over to the political realm, where opponents of a candidate or a sitting legislator or a judge or anything like of that nature, there are people that are coming out and making these same or similar accusations, and now we're in the political realm. So how do you, as politicians, sort of protect yourselves not only from that, from it being used as a weapon, a political weapon, but also to just make sure that it doesn't get too far out of hand to where, you know, pretty much anybody can say anything?
Sure. Well, I guess one of the biggest things that I see is that, you know, I think we got to get back to respecting everyone as a citizen. And I think that we got to be able to have the discussion, whether it's in Hollywood or whether it's in Washington, D.C. or Lansing, the fact that the most basic thing that we all have learned when we were in kindergarten and we were growing up, to respect people, to respect, you know, a girl or a guy, to be able to keep your hands to yourself, to be able to try to be a good citizen. And I think that's what we got to get back to, because, you know, I think there's a lot of people out there that feel that they could do whatever they want just because they're a Hollywood figure of a millionaire or a billionaire, or that they're in political life, that they think that, you know, they've got the keys to the world. And I think that, you know, we just got to get back to the most basic thing, respecting people who are our citizens and our fellow neighbors and our fellow relatives and friends. And I think that we wouldn't have so much of this in today's society. But I think that what's happening out there for people to be able to accuse a lot of folks, you know, it's just you're, because of the social media and everything, you're guilty first and you're proven innocent later. And I think that we got to go back to the fact that, you know, people are innocent until proven guilty also. And I think there's a lot of that out there, and I think that makes it worse today is this social media presence.
I know sports teams, like college teams and even professional sports teams, when they're bringing in new people, rookies or new recruits, their orientation includes how to protect yourself, how to not put yourself in these situations. Do legislators have that similar type of orientation?
No, we do not. I mean, I think that maybe that's something that we're going to see coming in the future. I just think that, you know, this all starts in our homes with our kids and our families, to be able to have discussions with the kids as they grow up. And I think that's the best place where everything takes place, where you respect each other, whether you tell your young people to stay away from drugs, to stay away from, you know, bad situations. And I think that's where we got to start, where it's going to make the most impact, is like up in the Copper Country. I think that a lot of us have the conversations with our young people about, you know, doing what's right and acting above board. And I think that's where we all got to be.
Scott, I appreciate you coming in. Real quick, what's on tap for 2018?
Well, in 2018, what we got coming now in Lansing is we're going to have a lot of discussion about what's going to happen with this car insurance. I think that this is an issue that everybody wants to get fixed. And we had one bad bill, House Bill 5013. We have a bipartisan package of bills. We want to get this done. This is one of the most important things that we got to get done to be able to save folks the money and to be able to protect their interest and their benefits.
Well, have some great holidays, and I look forward to talking to you next time.
Thank you.
Copper Country Today, we'll be right back.